Hi, and welcome to episode 3 of the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I'm Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Mike.
Danny.
Hey, Danny. Glad you could be here today with us. So we missed a couple weeks. Things got busy for a little bit, but we're back on the schedule, I think, now.
Probably. I think once every other week still might work, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. It's whenever we feel like it, really.
I think someone other than Mickey needs to do the introduction next time. We need to have like a rotating previously on Wardens of the Midwest.
As long as we're on the subject, I think someone other than Mickey has to do the schedule too.
Well, I think someone other than Joe should write the agenda.
I think someone other than Joe should do things that are useful.
Oh, how about someone other than Joe doesn't write this all the articles, all the agendas, all the announcements.
Joe like cut me off. I was saying something nice about him.
I just assume everything you say to me is an insult.
No, I mean it's greatly appreciated. I mean all the articles that you're writing and everything that you're doing, like dude, you know as much shit as we give you about Night's Watch, like it is really appreciated.
Oh, my back feels so padded
and
right
deserved.
Now.
I don't know if that was complimentary or creepy. But yeah, so we're back. We've got some things that we'd like to talk about here today. Some interesting new developments have been occurring. We've got a chapter pack coming out this month and the first big box coming out in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think the chapter pack comes out next week, probably Thursday, because mm-hmm. that seems like what they're doing is Thursdays.
Yeah.
And then the big box is coming out sometime in early April,
yeah,
I bet.
Which is unfortunate because it's the day after our game night.
It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Because we play on when... Because I've taken proxies to game night the day before.
Sure.
And I've gotten people yelling at me. Like, aww. Oh, come on, Mike.
I don't think... Actually,
yeah, that happened.
But honestly, is it that big of a deal to bring proxies? I mean, they're cards that we know of. It helps to play test. Why keep an... I mean, I'm with Joe on this one. I don't think there's anything wrong with bringing proxies.
Oh, the problem is with people who just don't keep up with them. They can't account for it. So, like...
Well, that's their fault.
Like, when I was playing Mike, I just built my Night's Watch Banner of the Sun deck right when Nymeria came out.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I had
Nymeria. Yeah, that
was... He was like, what is this card? What? No. No. No.
Yeah, well, I mean, and with game-changing cards like that, yeah, it makes sense. Like, wait, you can take my icons? Wait, how does this work?
If I knew in advance that this was going to happen, it would have been fine. But when he just like doesn't say anything when the game starts, and then
like,
he starts whipping out proxies.
Something like 2 weeks ago, you put it. You're like, and this is my proxy of this card that's about to come out called the Mountain. Here, like, read it for a second.
Yeah.
See, like, no, there's no way this is an actual card.
You printed this yourself.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I don't ever really... I mean, in casual games and, like, game nights and stuff like that, I don't really see a problem with bringing proxies. I guess you do need to let your opponent know, like, no, I'm playing with proxies from the next pack.
Well, it never occurred to me that he wouldn't be, because I was so excited to play Nymeria. I was like, everyone knows about this card.
Yeah, everyone does know, but, you know, it's...
I'm just going to start playing with proxies for 1.0 cards.
Red Vengeance.
Oh, no, that'd be terrible. That would be absolutely terrible. But yeah, I mean, well, I guess speaking of 1.0 cards, I think one of the things that we were discussing was cards that we would like to see for various factions that would, you know, maybe either rebrand, I mean, I guess redoing the 1.0 rules for certain cards and to introduce them into 2.0 to make their faction stronger.
Yeah, I was just, on Monday morning, I was just like, what should we talk about this week? And it came to my mind, like, you know, I didn't personally play 1.0, but people talk about it all the time. I've gotten a pretty good amount of exposure to the best cards in 1.0 and what a lot of factions were doing in 1.0. I was like, wouldn't it be a good idea to see, like, what card, like, you know, if you represented a faction, what would you want your faction to get from 1.0?
Sure.
So I figured I'd just proposed it to you guys, like, hey, how about we both take two, what if we all take two factions and just say what card from 1.0 or similar to 1.0 would impact that faction the most.
I think that's a great idea.
With modifications, obviously.
Oh, of course. Well, why don't we start with you then, with obviously your favorite faction that really needs some help right now. How about Night's Watch?
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought it was pretty funny because, like I said on Monday, the thing, when I came up with this idea, I was like, I'm going to put some kill into Night's Watch because they need some kill really bad. So I came up with a card, that, you know, like an event, like saying, like, after you lose an unopposed challenge, either kneel a character, kneel something to kill the attacking an attacking character. So that was my idea. when I came up with this little segment. But then obviously, the Watcher on the Walls came out.
Oh yeah,
and that's the new event. For those of you who don't know, it's a loyal Night's Watch event. One gold ranger trait. Play only during a military challenge. Challenges action. Kneel two ranger characters to kill each attacking character. So basically, when someone attacks you with military, if you have two rangers standing, you can just do fealty or you can pay a gold and kill everyone that's attacking.
Yeah, and for the 1.0 players out there, it's
lethal counterattack.
Yeah. So you know, I felt kind of like, oh well, FFG just totally stole my thunder on this one because that's almost like that's very similar to what I was thinking sure. they needed. So in lieu of that.
I mean, I see some things wrong with it, though. I mean, okay, it's on paper, it looks like a good card. You know, okay, military challenges when there's two rangers standing and a Night's Watch player has one gold or fealty standing, you know, in reserve, then, yeah, it's a threat that's there. And so you generally don't want to do the military challenge. But, I mean, there's so many ways past that. And first off, I mean, a hands judgment, your characters are still knelt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. And if you're willing to play that hands judgment game, that's a great way to get one up on Night's Watch right there.
Yeah, it's a risk, yeah. right? But to think of it this way, if I had two rangers and then another guy that could defend the military, mm-hmm. I could try it with the two rangers, like the two gold rangers.
Yeah.
Those little piece of garbage.
Sure.
Old
sure.
forest hunters. I just kneel those two guys, try and kill you. If you cancel it, then I'll just defend. Because it's a challenges action. It doesn't say when.
Sure.
It doesn't
sure.
say I have to have defenders or after defenders are announced. So I can try it. If you guys survive, I can then defend.
And one thing that I found was really interesting is its melee applications as well. Because it doesn't have to be attacking you as long as they're attacking characters.
That's how you make enemies in melee. Melee's supposed to be about making friends.
I know, but this is threat across the board. I mean, well, everyone's afraid at this point. Once there's a Night's Watch player on the board and they have two ranger characters, so they may not get their two powers, but I mean, they're getting your big characters, and that's threat.
Well, we're going to talk about melee a little bit later in the podcast, yeah. I think, if we stay on schedule. But
I'm not really sure why, but apparently it's a thing.
It's a thing, yes. So Mike's not thrilled about melee. But anyway, I was playing with Mickey once, and he did an attack that would have won in the game, but then I was playing Tyrell, and I high-gardened his renowned character out of the challenge.
Yeah, and
that would have won in the game, and then he lost because of it.
So. Yeah, it actually completely caught me off guard that he could high garden my character.
Even he wasn't attacking me.
I was attacking someone completely different, and he removed my character from that challenge. And because it doesn't say, I mean, like it was ridiculous. And I grabbed high garden. I'm like, really? Is this what it does? Oh, I guess it does.
So I think the Watcher on the Walls could be used in a similar way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm gonna be. It's exciting. It's definitely. But what else do you think? I mean, obviously, in my opinion, I think Night's Watch needs a reducer location. I think it's really strange that they didn't include it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Meager contributions, not a bad card, but it's three.
It's
slots.
It's not a reducer though.
It is. Yeah, it takes up three slots, and it's more of a choke mechanic as opposed to genuinely helping you because yeah. you're taking up three slots for a one shot use, and you have to draw into it. It's not a repeatable effect. Like a reducer location. But what else do you think Night's Watch could use?
Well, I thought about the reducer locations, but I thought that was a little too easy.
Sure.
I was looking over the Night's Watch cards in 1.0, and there was one that I've had my eye on for a while as something that I think would be really good in 2.0. There was a Jon Snow card in 1.0, and basically, I don't have it in front of me, but basically it was, I think, a military power icon. 3 for 2 strength or something like that.
Okay.
And it was your Night's Watch characters gain immunity to events.
Okay.
And I was like, that is awesome because so many times I'll defend and then the character that I'm defending with gets Dracarys.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, whatever it might be. You know, or I spend 7 gold for Old Bear Mormont and then he gets tears.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
just like, oh, this is ridiculous.
Sure.
So, you know, I thought that was really cool. I think that might be a little too strong for 2.0, at least right now.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to modify it. I think right now, you know, we have Samwell Tarly who gives reserve, +1 reserve. And then the yeah. Watch Has Need lets you search the top cards of your mm-hmm. Deck for rangers, stewards, or builders based on reserve.
Sure.
So I was like, why not try and build reserve into it? So, oh, and there's also a location that just gives you reserve in the future sure. chapter pack. So I was like, how about instead of just flat-out immunity to events, you could have something like a 5 for 4, even 5 for 3, Jon Snow, mm-hmm. military and something else, maybe intrigue, maybe power, I don't really know. But and he said in it, he has an action or just a trait saying, you know, opponents with less reserve than you cannot target your characters with events. Something like that.
Blanket immunity to events is awfully strong. I mean, maybe if it was only your unique Night's Watch characters or something.
And they're already giving Stark a lot of immunity to events and immunity to character effects and, you know, Catelyn not being able to trigger effects and things like that. It seems like Stark's going to be the one to mostly get those kind of things.
Yeah. Unfortunately. But, you know, I was just thinking of, like, what is my biggest irritation when defending the wall? And it's always when I'm defending and I get Dracarys, then it goes unopposed.
I think that's everyone's biggest
annoyance. It's like, you know, so if I were to make a card, I would want to incorporate that reserve element.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In some way. I don't necessarily think that...
Make reserve like a mechanic that affects the game state as opposed to just your hand size.
Make it something good. Make it worthwhile. Because I remember when I saw that 2 gold event, or 2 gold location, +1 reserve, and when you play it, you can draw a card.
Yeah.
And that's all it did, was just +1 reserve, and when you play it, you can draw a card. I looked at it, I was like, how am I going to play
this?
Wait,
for 1.0?
No. It's in a future chapter pack. I think it's called like the Rookery or Northern Rookery or something like that.
Yep.
It's a Night's Watch card that was spoiled in one of the future packs. And I was like, how is this going to do anything for me?
Sure.
And if I had things that actually triggered off reserve, something impactful, something
that
huge.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that would be really nice. So
that's interesting. I never thought about using like the actual reserve value as something. That's pretty cool.
Given that Night's Watch can't draw any cards except for off their Ravens.
And Sam-o.
And Sam, but their lack of intrigue icons is kind of...
Yeah.
You guys vastly underestimate how much draw they have. The Watch has need as draw, too.
Well, they have draw. They just never seem to really be able to trigger it much, other than the Ravens.
But, you know, with this new event comes out, I'm going to just stack my deck with Rangers.
Yeah.
Watch has need will be a 1 or 2 draw every single time I play it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, it doesn't seem like it's. I don't know if it's necessarily underestimating the Night's Watch draw. It's that I don't really play Night's Watch.
I know.
Admittedly, so I don't really know. Like, but when I see Night's Watch players, my hand is generally bigger than theirs.
Oh, it's because they're weak to intrigue.
Yeah.
It looks good on paper. It's Night's Watch reminds me a lot of House Tully from 1.0. Like, they were a defensive deck. All they tried to do was just put out, you know, 7 or 8 guys and just sit there and claim power.
Really?
And it didn't really work then. Sorry, Graham, if you're listening. I know you're a huge Tully fan, but and it doesn't seem to work now.
Hmm. Well, I mean, now they're going to be reintroducing Tully. I think it's going to be a little different.
Well, they're reintroducing it as a Stark underling.
Exactly. Well, that's what they were in.
Right.
And then, that makes sense for Night's Watch. I can definitely see that. And then there's another house that generally gets relegated to the Banner House, but it is a strong house in its own right. It has a lot of tricks, but doesn't really have something that ties them together just yet. And I'm speaking of Martell.
Yeah, and I figured I'd take Martell as well. I figured I'd take Martell as well. And this one I went very simple. You know, I'm sure this has been discussed by a lot of people who played Martell or even have any kind of awareness of 1.0. I really like the lose to win theme. You know, the Bone Way just came out, and I love that thing.
Really? So has it been working for you?
It has.
I haven't been able to get it out like until like past turn 3 or 4. I'm like, well, this is worthless.
Well, I do a Martell Banner of the Watch deck, and the Martell Banner of the Watch deck is all about you get Bone Way out, you get the wall out. And then if they attack you, you get Bone Way triggers. If they don't attack you, you get the wall. So it's a really good combination. I highly suggest it. And plus they have Gaston Grey, they have Maester Cal, they have Sunspear, the Long Plan, Bastard Daughter. They have a lot of really nice tools when you lose a challenge, punishing your opponent or gaining some sort of advantage.
Sure.
So my suggestion, and I'm sure many people have guessed it, why not just a reprint of Red Vengeance?
I mean, I know I can think of 1,001 reasons for no reason. Joe, would you like to remind some of our listeners about Red Vengeance?
So Red Vengeance, it was an event in 1.0, and it basically, the basic concept was you knelt influence, I think 2 influence. Mm-hmm. After you lose a challenge, kneel 2 influence to cancel the claim effects of that challenge, and then have... I don't know if it said your opponent or...
Your opponent satisfies the claim.
Have your opponent satisfy the claim. So if they did a power challenge against you and it was a 2-claim power challenge, you would lose, but then you'd take two power away from them rather than them taking two power away from you. So
No, that's not how it works. Yeah. They actually took two power off their own house and put it back on their own house.
Yeah. Really? They would satisfy the claim.
But military and intrigue, that is the way it works. If they made a two-claim intrigue challenge against you and you lost it, they discarded two cards.
Yeah. Well, that's disappointing, but still, I think it would be really good.
Oh, it was really powerful. Don't underestimate that card.
That card was lovely.
Yeah. In 2.0, I think it's very obvious that it would be a two-gold event. I kind of wanted to think it would be one gold, but there's no way that would cost one gold.
No.
So I will preface this by saying I think a lot of people are already predicting this because there was a, you know how they do spoiler fans, where it's just like a fan of cards. Yep. You see pieces of some of the cards. There was one spoiler where there was a card called Vengeance for Ilya. It was a 2-gold Loyal Martell event. And the text started with, interrupt, one claim is applied, and then you didn't see the rest. So yeah. I bet that's a reprint of Red Vengeance.
Okay, that makes sense.
I think that's what people are predicting.
Yeah, that's what people are predicting. So I went lazy on Martell because I spent so much time thinking about Night's Watch. Take it away.
But, I mean, okay, so in my opinion, like, what Night's Watch needs, or no, I'm sorry, what Martell needs, I mean, are they going to turn into, like, the way they were in 1.0 where they were so event-heavy? And is that what we're looking for? Do we just need Martell to have more and more events out there, more ways to play their events, more ways to cancel people's abilities? One thing that I want Martell to be more canceling, because it's that you got to lose to win mentality. And so there are some things that you just can't let through. There are certain events you can't let through. And Hand's Judgment right now is really, Hand's Judgment and Brand really are only two ways right now of getting rid of events. I want like a Martell only way to cancel events.
You want Oh, brain isn't working. He calls it thinking. He calls it thinking back.
I didn't want to be the one to say it, but I guess I did. Yes, I want he calls it thinking back. He calls it thinking allows you to cancel a trigger effect and then attach, he calls it thinking, to a character and gives them plus one strength. Is that right? Or plus two strength, that's right. And it was not only a cancel, but it was a strength buff. And it was so brilliant. I love that card. I miss it.
Didn't Martell also have an event that said, like, cancel an event, attach it to your house card, and you may use it as if it was in your hand or something along those lines?
No, yeah, that was a late Doran that something. That never really saw much play.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, really? Yeah.
Because like when I was scrolling through the Martell cards, I was like, that's pretty interesting. I still like Red Vengeance more, but this is pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Burning on the Sands. I mean, we've got it now with Unbend, Unbound, and Broken. It's not as good, but, you know, it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's move on. I mean, yeah, Martell, I just think, I mean, if it's either going to be events or more, like, characters to tie them together, something a little more that gives them a little more oomph.
I want that lose-to-win focus to really come alive.
Sure.
Because I remember when the Bone Way came out and everyone was like, oh, this is the worst card since Brandon's Gift. And some people on, like, certain podcasts just can't, like, totally panned it.
I'm totally one of those people.
I love it. I think it's really good.
I just think it's only good if you get it out either in setup or first turn.
Building orders.
Yeah, I mean, you're
going to you're going to waste a plot to find the Bone Way.
Sure.
It's a great card. But, I mean, let's say you have Gaston in hand and you just get your Bone Way. Or, you know, you have Bone Way and you want to get Gaston. I mean, either way. Am I still going to put Voting Orders in a Martell deck? No.
There you go.
You put in a Martell Banner of the Watch deck, and then you can get the Wall, Bone Way, or Gaston Gray.
And see, now that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. Let's move on to another house. Danny, you want to take it away with Baratheon?
I didn't know a whole lot about 1.0 cards.
Sure.
When we first talked about this, I kind of thought of it as making your own card.
Which I think is perfectly fine, yeah.
You could do that, too.
I ended up finding some analogs after it got explained to me. But with Baratheon right now, what I do is I try to run, like, really lean. It's, like, because when you're trying to put out, like, I can't remember her name.
Mel.
When you're trying to put out Mel and then, like, Robert right after or Stannis right after,
yeah.
It really is, like, really constricting on your gold.
Yeah.
So for people, like, playing against, like, rush decks that have, like, four or five guys, and I usually get it's, like, the first, like, two turns of a game usually decide whether or not I win or lose. Because,
sure.
Like, do they kill my Mel or do they just put to the sword my Robert as soon as he comes out? So I always thought that if I wanted a deck that had to run that lean still, I needed some like extra protection, and I came up with some card idea I thought was okay, but it basically boils down to the original Lightbringer.
Okay. Yeah.
That like mine was a little more creative than that, but it's that's just what I needed.
What is the original Lightbringer?
The original Lightbringer, it was like a 2 gold attachment, and then just kneel to save the character it's attached to.
Okay.
And so more save. I mean, because now that Tyrell got Ladies in Waiting, we don't have a Baratheon thing, you know, like, what was it, Loyal Bodyguard?
Yeah, that was very similar to a Baratheon card.
Because basically what they are is they're characters that you can attach to lords or ladies, and they act as duplicates.
The card I came up with, just off the top, was just making it up, was something like Kingsguard. And it would be, I was playing off of the sort of theme that Baratheon has of dominance.
Sure.
And it'd be like, if you win dominance, like Kingsguard would be like an attachment or something. Kneel Kingsguard and get a copy of a unique character you have in play and put it in your hand.
Okay. Oh, neat.
Oh, so it's like a dupe fetcher.
Yeah.
What I want is Baratheon recursion. I mean, we've got Melisandre, you know, she's the high priestess of Rheolar, and she can bring people back from the dead. You know what I want to see? Bringing Baratheon characters back from the dead.
So you want
Aaron Dampere for Baratheon.
Or something like that. But, I mean, there's got to be a negative to it, you know, because Beric Dondarrion in the books, every time he was brought back, you know, felt like less of a man, felt less human in a lot of ways, to the point where at the end of it, when he was finally killed by the Hound, sorry, spoilers, and... if you haven't read it at this point, I'm really sorry. The whole thing that happened was he was welcoming death, and so having like a mechanic like that in Baratheon, where yes, you bring him back from the dead, but they have minus two strength.
Mickey's not even giving proper spoilers.
Well, he was
trolling you with spoilers.
He was brought back to life by Thoros right after the Hound killed him.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So he wasn't embracing death. He just knew that he could come back to life.
No, he didn't want to though. That was his whole thing. It was only in service. I mean, that's the way I always took it. But I think like a recursion thing would be pretty cool too. But I see your point definitely. Yeah.
Maybe we should start doing spoilers on this podcast, but they're just all lies. Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah. I did that to Amanda after she finished book one. I sent her like a giant text worth of these are spoilers. I told her the dragons eat Danny in book two because
she believed you too.
In High Valyria and Daenerys meant tasty morsel.
Oh my god! For anyone out there, Amanda's my girlfriend. So. Wow, yeah, that was.
I think she believed me up until that one.
Up until the tasty morsel, she definitely believed. So, I mean, what else do you see for Baratheon? Because Baratheon is—they're pretty much a consistent house right now. What would take them over the top, in your opinion?
Take them over the top. That's the thing. They're
on the top.
I mean, I feel like. Even FFG realizes they're kind of at the top right now. That's why they've gotten, like, nothing for three packs.
True. Yeah,
Moon Boy, sure, you got a current draw.
I like Moon Boy.
He's good. I'm not saying he's bad.
Yeah.
But really, is that what...
None of you liked Moon Boy. I was the only one here that liked Moon Boy at first.
He's okay.
Talk shit about Moon Boy.
He's okay. He's playable, at least.
Sure.
But, like, if you just look at what any other house has gotten in the last three chapter packs compared to what Baratheon has gotten...
Okay.
And the fact that Baratheon is still playable after just being core for the most part.
That's
after three packs.
Targaryen was like that until like Crown of Gold. Isn't Crown of Gold the only change in Targaryen since core?
Crone.
Right. Okay. Crone. Yeah. So
I mean,
a couple crones.
Yeah. I mean, you run one or two. I mean, it's a good card.
It's changed like two cards since core set.
What else? I mean, I'm trying to think. Is there?
I mean, Baratheon's just like that.
I mean, since we're on the topic and. And
oh, wait, what about Vase Dothrak? You always run three of those. It's
you're
the best card ever.
Sorry.
I mean, since you guys assigned Targ to me, I honestly don't even
Targ
know what we could come up with to make Targ better. They don't need anything.
I can say
they need to stop giving them crappy cards like Merchant Prince or whatever that thing from the first chapter pack was that's completely unplayable.
Completely filler.
I mean, for you, I figured Targaryen would be super fun because... You could actually change some, like, you could add a card that actually changed the deck because it's been so static since core set.
Talking about Merchant Prince, I think it's not terrible. I had a deck with Noble Lineage in it, so you just
tricon.
Tricon, four strength tricon.
See, my problem with Merchant Prince, though, is that, you know, thematically, if you put a milk on him, it's the saddest card ever.
But why would you milk him?
No, if someone else milks him, because, you know, it's an attachment. He really wants to get that strength up in the icon, but he can't.
But he can't because he's blank now.
It made me so sad. I feel really bad for that guy.
Targ's getting everything they need. They're not giving them
except for one card.
Good cards, but
Hatchling's Feast. Mike, would you care to tell the rest of the class what Hatchling's Feast is?
Oh, Hatchling's Feast was a 3-cost event that said choose 3 characters. One of them gets -3 strength, one of them gets -2 strength, and one of them gets -1 strength.
And especially with Blood of the Dragon coming out, you know, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, they're just handing Targ everything they need.
Well,
yeah.
let me ask you another question, then. They have everything they need for the current build, right? Why not talk about building a Dothraki deck? What would they need to make a Dothraki deck?
They need a Blood Rider character, a cheap ambush Blood Rider.
Non-unique Blood Rider character.
Because Rakaro
is the only Blood Rider right now.
Right, and we haven't seen a spoiler for another
Blood
one.
Blood Rider character?
Yeah, I mean, you could do like, you know, Drogo's Peoples. I don't know.
Drogo's Peoples?
Well, I think there was a 1.0 card called Blood Rider.
Blood Riders are like the 3 or 4 select guards of the
Yeah,
the
I think
con.
The Blood Riders were the select guardians of the queen.
Yeah, Drogo's Peoples.
The Khaleesi.
His peeps.
So, you know, when I was thinking of this, I was like, what could Targaryen use? Why not some way to make attachments recur from the discard pile? Because they have Vaes Dothrak, which is unplayable
Spring
right
wave.
Now. What?
Street Wave.
Oh, God.
So Street Wave.
Go ahead.
All right, so Street Wave, correct me if I'm wrong, 2-cost, 1 strength, intrigue icon. They stated basically, if you have 2 or more, Neil Street Wave, you have 2 or more discard cards in your discard pile, your opponent chooses one of them to put back in your hand.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, they have Vaes Dothrak, which is seeing no play because who would discard an attachment to discard another attachment?
Yeah, so you need recursion.
It seems
for that.
Silly. So,
yeah.
Why not make some sort of recursion, whether it be an attachment that bounces back to your hand by itself or some other way to grab attachments from your discard pile?
Yeah, definitely.
I figured that would be something.
Well, that was definitely a theme in 1.0. Yeah, there was a core set 1.0 card that said after you marshal a character, choose an attachment in your discard pile with printed cost equal or less than the cost of that character and put it back in your hand.
Was that Danny's Chambers?
Yeah, Danny's Chambers. Yeah. It was a wonderful card.
That could possibly help them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really could. I mean, you're right. I mean, but now the other thing about recursion, though, recursion's a dangerous game to play. Like, the moment things go to dead in discard pile, the ability to bring them out there. And I think the house that gets that first, I mean, then who cares? You know, that's better than card draw.
Well, like Greyjoy already has recursion.
Actually, well, then let's move on to Greyjoy then. I mean, Danny, what do you think? What is Greyjoy? Because Greyjoy was really strong for a while, and they're still consistently strong. But now the other houses are getting cards that are making them just really powerful.
Yeah.
What do you think Greyjoy needs to get back on top?
I'm not exactly sure, especially from my limited experience with 1.0 Greyjoy cards. Honestly, one thing I have a problem with is Greyjoy's economy a little bit. They have some like really good high-cost characters that just can't play because they want to run plots that have good abilities on them, like Storm of Swords and stuff like that, so they can get a whole bunch of kill off. But then they end up getting like 2 to 3 goals
exactly.
on plots.
Rise of the Kraken, you know.
Yeah.
Like that.
So if there's any if I was talking about the current sort of stealth kill deck that Greyjoy has going on, I'd probably want something that helps their economy a little bit more. Even if it was something that just said, like, rather than granting money, like, reduce the cost of a location or reduce the cost of an item by 1 or 2.
Sure. And then, you know, moving more in towards Greyjoy having choke mechanics,
yeah.
Which I think is great.
Well, that's what if I brought something back from 1.0, it would be the Greyjoy mill decks. I don't think were ever terribly good, but I thought they looked awesome.
They weren't terrible. Greyjoy choke was better. There was one card I'd really like to see from Greyjoy that came out for Greyjoy, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it called Plunder? It was the one it's an attachment that you put on.
Burned and Pillaged?
Yeah, Burned and Pillaged.
Oh, is that like -1/-1 on a location or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, -1 gold, -1 initiative.
Yeah,
too.
Wow. And it was like a 1-cost attachment that you would put on an opponent's location. And what I think would be even better is blank the location on top of that, make it a 2 or 3-cost attachment. And then you not only give them the -1/-1, but now you're blanking the location, kind of like Frozen Solid.
Yeah, Frozen Solid is already blanking, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to see Greyjoy effectively be able to use Naval Superiority.
Yeah.
Because right now, doesn't do much anything. Mm-mm, it's like kind of a crapshoot on whether it's going to work or not.
Well, I mean, no, it's just one of those cards that you have to be able to call what your opponent's going to do. If your opponent has a light board, chances are they're going to play a Kingdom card to get economy. Well, you know, and so that's one of those things. I mean, and most economy cards are Kingdom right now, except for Calm Over Westeros, I believe.
Well, yeah. Oh, correct me if I'm wrong. This is my thinking when it comes to naval superiority. You know, I see a lot of people running it first plot. And I think that's really bold, because unless you're playing it out of, like, a deck that no one would think naval superiority is coming out of, like, if you're playing against the Greyjoy deck, or if you're playing against the Night's Watch Kraken deck that is seeing a lot of play right now, you kind of have to expect that you're going to get naval superiority on turn one. I mean, that's just the whole concept of that deck. So if you're aware of the meta and everything like that, you would not play into naval superiority turn one. So naval superiority almost feels like preying on new players or preying on inexperienced or unaware players.
Yeah, if I was in naval superiority, definitely turn one would be what I'd do it.
Yeah, I mean, I like
especially depending on what their flop is.
Mm-hmm.
I like it more falling of Varus. I like it more right after you milk someone, you expect a confiscation.
Yeah.
I think those are the plays where it can really affect the game. I really don't like it on turn one. I think it's a total crapshoot, because so many people play Calm Over Westeros.
Exactly.
Just because they don't want to get fucked over.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Well, it can be a mind game, though. Because, I mean, if you suspect your opponent has it, and you're like, well, I'm not going to play my noble cause on turn one to get my big guy out there, and then they don't play it, well, then you get to turn two, and you're like, do I play noble cause now, or do I expect to get hit with it this round?
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, you know, one thing, when I think I may be playing across from naval superiority, it makes me look at my plot deck and go, really? I only have one card that won't get hit by naval superiority. Oh, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I think, so Danny, I mean, like, with Greyjoy, in your opinion, besides, like, moving towards mill, besides moving towards choke, like, in terms of moving towards mill, like, are you saying more pillage? Are you saying more event support?
I think pillage is a great event. I mean, it's never going to get there, though, without help.
Yeah.
I remember briefly looking over a mill deck list, like, way back when, maybe, like, 3 years ago, sure. And looking at some of the cards. I remember one, there was, like, a rat that you played for, like, one gold and gave it to your opponent.
Played that card.
Yeah.
I love that card.
So that wasn't a good card. I couldn't tell.
It never saw play. Yeah. It was funny. It was a really funny card. But for the time when I played 1.0, I never saw it played. Now, Mike, I mean, you know, you played Greyjoy more than I did in 1.0. Did it see play at all outside of?
No, it was.
To finish my thought, it was like a rat that you played, and what you did is you gave it to your opponent and became one of their characters, but it had no icons, and it could not be chosen as a claim in the military. Yeah.
Period. You couldn't valor it in Wildfire. I mean, like every
and
time.
And then every turn it said, whoever owns this card mills the top of their deck.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a very strange card. There was a. You know what I mean, I guess going with that mill idea, what I would like to see with Greyjoy, and I don't remember the exact text for Fishmonger Square, but, you know, I'd like the ability to have a location that allows you to mill, that, you know, basically gives you the pillage, like, you kneel it to discard the top two cards.
I don't think Greyjoy will ever get to actually mill someone, so if I was really going to move pillage in a different, way... It would be more of like the Yulon Kuroi sort of way,
sure.
Where it's when you pillage, something happens. Like I think there was a card called like Corpse Lake.
Yep.
Like when you pillage
a character, you
gain
a power. Yep.
Yeah, and well, you could even do more stuff interacting with their discard pile as well.
Yeah. 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 Well, okay. I mean, that makes sense with Greyjoy. I think that's a good way to do it. Well, now I'd like to talk about my favorite house, House Lannister. Ugh. Now,
I think all Mickey's ideas for this are terrible.
So now what's going to bring Lannister to the top? Lannister's already one of the top houses. It doesn't need much more. What it does need is character. I mean, I think cheaper characters that are actually worth it. and I think we're going to be getting that with Crimson Cloaks and things like that. And I think it's going to be more ways to, you know, use money, more ways to pump money into something. Like, I like the Arbor Knight. I would like an Arbor Knight for Lannister. You know, for that excess money. You know, when I win Worlds, you know what my card's going to be? It's going to be Sir Pounce. I'm so excited about this. Two cost attachment. Unique Lannister character only. Give attached character plus one strength and stealth. And then, much like Lady, I would like to be able to pay money to put on any unique Lannister character anytime I want. Limit twice per phase.
Oh, my God.
I know. But in reality, like, what I would like to see is more things keying off Ambush and making Ambush. Because right now, they've got a few cards at Ambush. They're only really the only house that allows for Ambush right now.
Yeah, Stark.
And, yeah.
Wolfswood.
That's true. That's true.
I would like to see more Ambush in general. It was my favorite keyword in 1.0.
It's mine, too. And I'd like to see things that key off of Ambush.
When's Deadly coming back?
Oh, I don't ever want to see Deadly come back. That was.
I would love to see Deadly come back.
But, I mean, like, one thing I'd like to see is, like, something like Wolfswood, actually, but for Lannister. I'd like to be able to bring in my other characters. Now, they have, you know, like, Hear Me Roar, or what's the other one? I Never Bet Against My Family.
Yeah. And, the, you know, they have cards that everyone shrugged off, and then they started becoming a phenomenon in terms of how successful the deck
jumping
is.
Jumping Lannister is amazing. Have you guys played with it or against it yet?
I've heard of it. I haven't actually seen it in action yet.
It is a thing of beauty. I love that deck so much. And what I want now are things like, if a character's brought into play, like Queen's Assassin, or the other one, Olenna's Informant, when they're brought in during the challenge.
They have actual effects.
Yeah, they have effects, or things that key off of those effects, like maybe draw a card, you know, maybe a location when a character comes in during the challenges phase, or during a challenge, when a character is ambushed in during a challenge, draw a card or something like that. Something simple, something straightforward, but something that, you know, gives the ambush mechanic a little more oomph. And I think that would really, really help out Lannister moving forward with that. And okay. And so, yeah, I think that'd be good. And then, you know, let's go to the Lannister's polar opposite. We got a big box coming out. Does Stark really need anything? I mean, what do we say, you know, about Stark?
when I was putting these together, I was like, what would anyone say about Stark right now? Because they're another faction that's seen a huge resurgence.
Yeah.
In the meta right now. I mean, with Lady and Winterfell Kennelmaster?
Just Kennelmaster.
Is
it just Kennelmaster?
I'm not sure.
Whatever it is. That whole naval...
Let's bringing, argue about it.
Bringing naval into Stark. I thought that was a really cool idea, and it's really proving... it's showing dividends in terms of, like, it's winning tournaments. Yeah. It's winning
and
store championships.
And the plot now. The plot and that's the coming. Plot. Oh, my God. Have you seen the plot for Stark?
Yeah.
In case you guys have not heard of this yet, it's Wardens of the North. It's 5 gold, 5 initiative, 1 claim. It's a loyal Stark plot.
5 reserve, right?
Yeah, five reserve. It's a war. It has war trait. Challenges action. During a challenge in which you control a participating Stark character, kneel another Stark character to have it participate in that challenge on your side. Limit twice per round. So you just get 2 navals that round.
Yeah, pretty much.
And
decent gold.
And decent gold, good initiative.
Yeah, exactly.
Relatively okay.
Did you say... Oh, never
mind. Naval is from 1.0. Yeah. It's just the ability to jump someone in
basically, one of the icons, there'd be a little ship. And if the character has naval on that icon, what you're able to do is, as a challenges action, kneel them and have them participate in the challenge. Like, you don't have to declare them as an attack. I mean, it's as if you were declaring them as an attacker or a defender.
So with those and with Winterfell Kennelmaster, it's just creating all these challenge math issues, and I love challenge math.
I didn't even realize it was a war plot. Plays right into King's Rob Host.
Shabba-da-ba-da.
King Rob's Host.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
the Vanguard of the North?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. No,
if
I think
people actually run that card.
Yeah, I don't think we need to see much else. And then,
I think they're still a little all over the place with Stark, though. Like, they need something to tie all their...
I would agree.
Everything together. Like, maybe an agenda that says, after you win a military challenge, you claim 2 power. They could nerf it by saying you don't get unopposed power in intrigue or power challenges.
So you want to bring back
Siege of Winterfell?
Yeah.
So it seems appropriate for the environment.
It is. I mean, and for people who aren't familiar with it, Siege of Winterfell was a 1.0 card. It was an agenda. And it said you cannot claim power for your house.
Except
during military challenges.
Not even power challenges?
Power challenges are done because...
That's moving power.
Yeah, because you're moving power. You're not claiming power.
Oh.
You're not pulling it from the reserve. You're moving it from your opponent's house to yours. But unopposed and things like that, nothing.
You couldn't even win dominance.
Yeah, you couldn't win dominance.
Does renown count?
That goes on a character, not on your house.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's good.
Ah.
And basically what it said was, after you win a military challenge, claim 2 power.
Storm of Swords.
Exactly. And then, but the other thing that they did was, and this is something I'd like to see them bring back, and I know a lot of people disagree with me on this one, epic events.
I liked epic.
I think they were great. So what epic events were...
exhausted.
So what these are really interesting. You would play them before the when revealed phase for plots. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
And basically, there was an event that you would just play down. You'd place it next to your house card. And it would create a new phase that was after challenges, but before dominance, called the epic phase. Am I getting that right?
No, it was post-dominance, standing.
Yeah, sorry, post-dominance before standing. And it would create another phase where challenges could be initiated based on what the card said. So what people would do is, like, you know, play characters that didn't kneel, play characters that could bounce in and out of play, and just do more military challenges. Hmm. You know, so not only would they get, if on a Storm of Swords turn, the two challenges from that, but then on during an epic phase, they would do another one, or just stack epic events next to their house and get challenge after challenge after challenge.
Okay.
And it was interesting, and it really gave Stark, until Stark Murder became very popular late in the meta in 1.0, it gave them a very cohesive way of making their military challenges give them power rush as well.
Okay.
Because those swings were really important. And then, so I think we probably only have time for one more house, right? Should we just finish up with Tyrell?
That's the eighth house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine we talk about
that.
Yeah,
I figure, we got time. We got time enough for the last one. Tyrell is a weird one. I think they need more ladies. I hate having to pull ladies from Stark right now with Tyrell. And Marjorie is amazing. Don't get me wrong. But what I want, is it possible, and I don't know if you guys think this would be too much, maybe a non-unique lady?
I think we need a different Queen of Thorns.
Well, yeah. Well,
I mean, they're reprinting Ned from, you know, in the Stark box.
Would that be the first non-unique lady in the entire game?
Yeah,
I mean,
how can you be a non-unique lady?
Because you could just be like
Lady in Waiting.
Is that actually a lady?
No,
Lady in Waiting is a lady. Oh, okay. They're companions. And I'm talking about like a non-unique lady. And how can you be a non-unique lady? You don't matter. You're not a very powerful one. You know, you're just kind of like provisional,
like a non-unique Sand Snake.
Yeah, exactly. And so you know, just a couple of non-unique ladies. I think it would tie in Lady Sansa's Rose. I think they're having more lady effects. You know, more things. Well, Lady in Waiting. You can't dupe a non-unique character. Oh, that'd be weird. Never mind. Okay, so. Because Lady in Waiting allows you to attach them as a duplicate to a lord or lady.
Well, that's probably why ladies are not non-unique.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, couldn't that just be a rules reference? Like, you can't dupe a non-unique character, so you can't put attach Lady in Waiting on a non-unique lady.
Yeah. That's weird.
It would create confusion.
It would. And then bodyguard and things like that.
Right? I mean, it would help Tyrell if they had a non-unique lady.
Just how about this? Cheaper ladies. You know, some cheaper ladies for it. And I
need one more.
Yeah, and one thing else that I want with Tyrell, and this is going to sound weird because the Mander is amazing. I want more draw effects. I want character based draw effects.
Jesus,
no, I really do, because with Tyrell, you're blowing through your hand with Tyrell.
Yeah, they're pleasure.
Don't you think there should be a reason for that?
Yeah, I mean pleasure barge. Okay, yeah, that is good burst draw. But I want more. I'm greedy.
So they have 9 instantaneous draw, and then the Mander is 2 additional draw.
Like I said, I know this wasn't going to be popular, but what I want, it's the house I was given.
I want more draw.
I would like a plot that also says, if your opponent does not win by the end of next turn, you win.
Yeah. I want a card for Night's Watch that says, draw your entire deck, you don't have reserve.
Ooh.
And you have infinite gold. I think that would be really good.
Wait, what? It sounded reasonable until that infinite gold thing. Like, if you want to just draw your whole deck up,
draw your entire deck.
If you have, no reserve, yeah.
So you just have a 60 card hand.
Oh, and limited doesn't count for that turn.
Yeah, and limited doesn't count for that turn. I mean, if we're gonna go ridiculous, let's just go all the way.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Yeah, no. I mean, really, what it comes down to with Tyrell is, I mean, they've got some of the pieces. I think in the next coming chapter packs, they're going to get what they need. I think Tyrell is going to be a really strong house coming up here. I think Lord of the Crossing will be good. I think there's just a lot of aspects of Tyrell that are really going to get rounded out. So I don't think we have to worry too much about Tyrell.
Yeah.
But so unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this week.
Are we out of time already?
We are out of time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'd like to thank Arkham House Games for, as usual, hosting us here and letting us do our things. I'd like to thank inexistent.org for hosting the website and hosting all the podcasts. Anybody else?
I'd like to apologize because I said we were going to talk about Melee and then we didn't.
we can save that for next week.
We'll talk about Melee next week.
Yeah, so upcoming Melee. Mike, anything from you?
Who's got a bad joke to finish out the episode?
Damn, could you at least get it back to get it, let it get around to me?
Yeah, you got to let it get around.
All right. Well, I did a little bit of research on Greyjoy so we could talk about them in like 1.0 cost. I actually found out like a really interesting tidbit, though.
No,
do you
didn't.
Know that Greyjoy don't actually make most of their clothes? They have to import them.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know why, Joe?
I do. I can already.
Well, then, well, no, Joe. Do you know why?
Tell me the answer.
It's because they do not
That's
sew.
So, Joe.
And with that, thank you and good night.